Act 2.
Love, you are beyond wars, beyond any place you fall. You make nests out of the soft cheeks of young girls for your slumber, and you hover over the oceans and distant lands. And no immortal god, nor mortal man with his measured days, escapes you. And then you catch, and your catch becomes insane. You, love! You push the minds of the just to do injustice. And you're the one who lit this fire of discord between two men of the same blood, between father and son. You, love! Through the lashes of a lusty bride, passion, you win the day, scorning the great laws which hold sway over the whole world. Because Aphrodite is invincible. So now I too, seeing all this, leave the laws behind me, and I cannot stop the fountain of my tears when I see Antigone being dragged to her eternal death chamber.
See me, citizens of our country. See how I take my final walk, and how my walk sees the final rays of the sun. Never again the sun. But Hades, who accepts all, sends me to the banks of Charos, having not felt the honorable joys of a wedding. Wedding songs were never sung outside my wedding chamber. Yet Charos will be my husband, the underworld my wedding chamber.
But you, Antigone, are a well-known, well-loved woman. You're on your way to Hades' dark chambers by your own hand.
You have not been hit by some dreadful illness, nor by some angry sword, but because you alone wish it. You, of all the mortals, wish to go down to Hades alive.
I've heard that Tantalus's daughter Niobe died a sad, bitter death. Up on the tip of Mount Sipylos, some ivy tied the Phrygian girl to a rock and bound her there forever, the ivy ever growing over her body. People say that the rains and endless snows melt her body and her tears roll down her throat. I see my own end being similar.
But she was a god, Antigone. And you were but a mortal. And so are we.
It's a heavy thing for the ears of immortals to hear that we, mortals, wish to share the fate of gods.
Ah, they're laughing at me. Why, by the gods of our fathers, why can you not wait at least till I'm gone below, away from Earth's light, away from your face, to do your mocking? City and men of Thebes, lords who possess her lands, running streams of our river, Dirce, forest of famed Thebes, let you be my witness. I am taken to my rocky jail, to a new type of grave, unlamented, and because of such gruesome laws, neither here nor there will I be with welcoming friends, neither with the living nor with the dead.
But Antigone, you've rushed too far, too fast to the edge of daring, and there, Antigone, you hit upon the throne of justice.
You stumbled too heavily, and now you're paying the price of some crime committed by your father.
You've brought up my bitterest memories, my deepest woes, about his thrice plowed anguish, my father's fate, the fate of his lineage, the famous house of Labdakai, the sinful marriage of a mother to her son, sleeping with the one to whom she gave birth, and from which union I, the poor wretch, was the offspring. And now I go down to find them, to be with them, cursed and unwed. Such dreadful fate is your payment, my poor brother Polynices. Even dead, you've made a living corpse out of me.
It is a good and sacred thing, this respect of yours. But to disrespect the power of others is also wrong, arrogant, and it's your own unbending will that has destroyed you.
Without songs of lament, nor joyful songs of marriage, friendless, hapless, I'm dragged along this inescapable final path. Nor will they let me, poor wretch, see the great sacred sun in the sky. Is there no friend who'll shed a tear of anguish for my death?
Enter Crayon and soldiers from the palace gates.
Ah! You know, if lamentations and cries were of any use to the dead, they'd never end. Take her from here and quickly. Do as I said. Shut her in a sealed cave and leave her there all alone and abandoned. Let her die if she wants, or let her marry in there. We are innocent of her. She's deprived only of living up here.
Soldiers tie Antigone's hands.
My wedding grave, my eternal home dug deep into the earth. I'm starting off for you, for my people, of whom Hades' wife, Persephone, received a multitude. I'm the last of them and much more wretched than them. I go before my time, but I go with the fervent hope that my father will receive me with love. You too, mother, and you too, brother Eteocles, whom I love very much, because it was these hands which have washed your bodies, which have dressed you, and which have honored you with all the gifts given to the dead. Yet now, Polynices, I'm suffering this way because I want to bury your body also. Yet I've honored you justly, and all those with a wise mind would agree. Whether a mother or of children or a wife, I'd always take up this struggle and go against the city's laws. And which laws am I talking about? Were I married and my husband died, I could have married yet another. And had I children and they died, I could have had more by another man. But once my parents go down to Hades, it is no longer possible for me to have a brother. And so I've put you ahead of Creon's laws, my dearest brother. And Creon thinks it is an act of crime and an act of intolerable arrogance. And so he has tied my hands and is dragging me to Hades even before I know the joys of a wedding night. Before I see a husband next to me, before I raise any children. Only abandoned thus by my friends, not yet dead, I go down. I, whose fate is dark, am now taken down into the shadowy alleys of the dead, without having trampled on any god's law. And why should I put my hope on the gods? Whom shall I call for an ally when, by doing what is just, I have been judged unjustly? Yet, if all this is thought by the gods to be just, I would die, admitting that I acted unjustly. If, however, it is the others who are at fault, then let them not suffer all that which they have made me suffer.
Her soul is still in the grips of the same whirlwind.
And this is why these two men will shed many tears. Why are you taking so long?
This word rings my final hour.
I advise you not to think that your fate will not be accomplished.
Ancient gods of our Thebes, land of our fathers, this is the end. They are taking me away. See here, great landowners of Thebes, look upon your last princess. Look how I'm suffering, and by whose hand? Only because I kept my reverence to the gods.
Antigone is led away. The sun is descending. Enter the blind seer, Tiresias, holding onto a walking stick and onto the hand of a young boy.
Here we are, lords of Thebes. Two men with the eyes of one, such as the blind man's lot. He needs a guide.
What's the matter, my dear old Tiresias?
Listen to the seer and he'll tell you.
I've never before ignored your thoughts, old man.
And that's why you've steered this city well.
I agree. Your views have helped me often.
Well then, Creon, know this. You're treading upon a razor's edge.
What? Your words send chills through my backbone.
You'll know that after you hear the signs sent to me through my art. Whilst I was sitting at the seat from where I read the signs of the birds, a real haven of every divination, I heard a strange sound from birds that cried with a shrill voice, all tangled, incomprehensible, as if with an evil intent. I understood that they tore at each other with their sharp talons. The clashing of their wings created a most terrible din. I was frightened and immediately went to check the burnt offerings on the altars, which were covered with fires. But among all the meats which were burning, I could not see Hephaestus' bright light. Rather, the juices and the fat were flowing into the ashes, and there was smoke and cinders flying about, and the bile spread wide through the air. Whereas the meats were left there, heavy and soaked in the melted fat. These are the things this child told me. These things and how the divinations were spoiled by terrible signs. This is why he's here, as a guide for me, as I am for others. Our city is suffering all this because of your own head, Crayon. Because all our altars and all our other fires were filled by the birds and dogs who feasted on the corpse of the poor dead son of Oedipus, Polynices. Gods don't accept prayers and sacrifices from us, nor do they accept the flames of the burning meats anymore. Nor are the noises of the wings clashing pleasant to them, because they are gloated by the fat of the dead. That's why, my son, understand this. All men make mistakes, but when they do, it would be a wise and well-acting man who corrected that mistake and moved on, rather than stayed here stubbornly and unrepentant. The stubborn man is rewarded with more errors. Come now, do as the dead wish and don't hurt those in pain. Do you think it bravery to kill a dead man again? It's because I want what's good for you that I tell you to do what's good. There's no better thing than for someone to heed the words of those who wish him well.
Old man, now I can see it. I can see you all lined up like archers, pointing your arrows toward me. Even your prophecies are aimed at me. As for those of our generation, it's been a long time now since they've sold me out and bundled me off for export. Try it then, and I wish you good profits. Go ahead, trade with me, and bring as much Sardian silver or Indian gold as you like. But a grave for that man you will not be able to buy. Not even if Zeus's mighty eagles grab that corpse and deliver it, its flesh before his throne. Even then, don't think that in fear of some sacred pollution I'll allow his burial, because I know very well that no man can pollute the gods. But I promise you, old man Tiresias, that they who embellish their wicked words for their own evil profit fall hard.
Is there no one who... Does no one know? Speak up! Speak up!
What? What are you trying to say to us?
What I'm trying to tell you, Crayon, is that man's best endowment is wisdom.
Just as idiocy is our worst crime.
You're possessed by this illness to the full.
I have no wish to contradict our seer.
But you're doing so by saying that my prophecies are lies.
The whole race of prophets loves money.
And the kings love their shameful prophets.
Do you realize all these things you're saying? The things you're saying to your king?
Of course I do. And you should thank me for having saved the city.
You're a good seer, but you're wrong, Tiresias.
You'll make me tell you all those things I have locked tightly in my heart.
Go ahead. Say them all, but not for profit.
Is that what you take me for?
Be sure of this. You will not be changing my mind.
Crayon, you'll be sure of this. The rushing sun will not finish many of its circles before you make a corpse out of your own flesh and blood. It will be an exchange of corpses. For the person you've sent from this world to the world down below, and for the one soul which you entombed as punishment, and for the corpse you've stolen from the gods below, and keep up here unburied and deprived of his burial rites. This corpse belongs neither to you nor to the gods above, and all these things are done because of your own impudent head and by force. Hades' furies and the furies of other gods are keeping vigil, waiting till you too fall foul of your own laws. See now if my speech is lined with a golden bribe. It won't be long now. Listen, it won't be long now before you'll hear the wailing of men and women. Every nation raises its hatred when either dogs or wild beasts tear at or polluted sacred bones, or when some wild bird carries an unholy scent into the housed city. Like an archer, I shot such arrows at you, and you'll not escape their flame because you've hurt me bitterly. My boy, take me home, far away from here, so he can extinguish his anger upon a younger man. And let him learn to hold his tongue more quietly and his mind, what's left of it, more wisely.
Exit, Tiresias.
The old man has gone, my king. And what dreadful prophecies, my king. And I know, too, that since the days when my head wore black instead of gray hair, that seer has never lied in this city.
I know that, too. And my mind is in turmoil. It would be a terrible thing if I were to retreat. Yet to insist upon this course frightens me, that I shall fall upon a disaster.
We need wisdom, son of Menoiceus.
Tell me what to do, and I shall listen.
Go and get the woman out of her underground grave, and dig a grave for the unburied.
You think this is a good idea, to go back upon my word?
Yes, my king. Do that as quickly as you can. The punishments of the gods have swift feet, and do whatever evil they wish.
I'll do so, reluctantly, but I will do it. Yes, I'll go back on my word. No one should fight against what must happen.
So run. Run yourself, and don't leave this for others to do.
I'm off immediately. Slaves, come! Run with me, however many you are. Pick up your shovels and run over to that spot you see over there.
Some slaves rush out of the palace side doors and follow the directions of Creon.
I'm coming also, now that I've changed my mind, and I'll bring her out of that cave that I've put her in. I'm afraid. It's best to live by ancient laws, the laws which apply to all.
Exit Creon.
Bacchus, you with the thousand names, you, the precious jewel of Semele, Cadmus' daughter, son of Zeus, whose voice reaches far, Bacchus. Bacchus, who loves famous Icaria and rules at the crowded Eleusis in the folds of Dio. Bacchus, who lives in the Bacchanan's first city, Thebes, near the rolling waters of Ismenus, above where the dragon's teeth were sown. Bacchus. Above the double-peaked rocks sways the smoke and the flame of the fire. The Corcian Menaeads pass dancing. The torches saw you inside the flames and the smoke, and so has the crystalline fountain. Bacchus, it is you they follow whenever you come to visit. The vines on the mountainsides of Nysia, full of grapes. The sacred songs of Thebes on her wide roads, the city which you hold with greater honor from all others, along with your mother, who was struck by a thunderbolt, a death of miracle, a death of awe. Bacchus, come now that this city of yours is in the grips of a great pollution, from one end to the other. Come and bring us salvation, either from beyond the Parismus or the groaning straits. Bacchus, you bring the flaming stars of heaven to your dance. You stand by the night orgies. Child, son of Zeus, appear to us our defender, along with your Bacchae, who follow you and dance with you all night. Come now, Bacchus, who spreads the loud joy.
It's evening. Enter the herald.
Men who live around the houses of Cadmus and those of Amphion, I shall never praise nor lament the life of man, whatever it may be. Fate lifts him high, and fate drops him hard upon his destruction, whether he lives well or miserably, and no one can tell what's in store for him. Creon, for example. I once used to think that he was an envied man. He saved his land from Cadmus's enemies, took over its royal office, and let his seed blossom among the nobles. Yet now he has lost everything. He lost it because when a man's body has lost all sense of joy, you can say he's not alive anymore. He's a living corpse. You can have as much wealth in your house as you like, and you can live like a king, but when joy is missing, then all those other things I wouldn't exchange for the price of the shadow of smoke, not against the sweetness of joy.
What calamity have you brought to the kings this time?
They are dead. Both of them, because of those still living.
And who's the murderer? Who's dead? Speak up!
Hymen is lost, dead, rolling in his own blood.
How did that happen? By his father's hand or his own?
By his own. Angered by his father because of that death.
Ah, old man Tiresias, how true was your prophecy.
Now that things happened like this, we need to think about other matters.
Yes, but I see Creon's wife, poor, unfortunate Eurycide. I hope that she has come out of her room because she has heard of her son's death. Or just by accident.
Enter Eurydice with a couple of slaves to the gates of the palace.
Men of our city, my ears caught your words just as I was about to go and pray to the goddess Athena. I was about to pull the bolt on the gate when the horrible sound of a household disaster hit my ears. My knees weakened from the shock, and I turned to fall into the hands of my slaves. Yet whatever it is, tell me again. I am not inexperienced when it comes to disaster. Tell me.
I'll tell you, my queen. I was there in front of it all, and I'll tell you the whole truth, hiding nothing. In any case, why should I soften the disaster if I'm to be found a liar afterwards? The straightest road, then, is always the truth. So, I was following your husband, my queen, as his guide towards the hill of the valley where the unburied body of Polynices was lying, mercilessly torn by the dogs. We prayed to the roadside goddess and to Pluto to have mercy and end their anger. We washed the body with blessed water and then burned the remnants of his body on freshly cut olive branches. Then, after we threw over the ashes, soil of our city, high enough to make a grave, we left for the rocky cave where Hades' bride, Antigone, was shut. From the distance, one of our men hears the voice of someone wailing from within the place of the unlamented grave and immediately runs and tells Creon. And as Creon approached closer, that sad voice swayed over him, weaker now, and Creon gave an anguished cry. Oh, misery! Am I a seer, too? Is this the most miserable road I've ever had to endure? I hear my child's voice. Run, slaves, quicker, around the grave. Pull back the stones from the entrance and go in. Go in to see if it's the voice of my Hymen, or if the gods are deceiving me. And so we did as Sad King ordered. We entered the grave, and what did we see? There, in the deepest part of the grave, was Antigone, hanging by a piece of her garment tied around her neck. And next to her, holding her by the waist, was Hymen, still wailing the loss of his bride to Hades, his father's deeds, and his empty wedding bed. As soon as Creon saw him, we groaned bitterly, and Going inside the cave, he calls at him, "Poor boy, what have I done? What entered my mind? What pitiless disaster befell you? Come outside with me, son, I beg you on my knees." But the boy dug his wild eyes at him and spat at his face. Then quickly, without even answering his father, he pulled out his two-edged sword, and the father only just managed in the nick of time to save himself by rushing out. Having missed, Hyman became enraged and turned his anger upon himself. In a second, he turned the iron blade toward him and dug it deep into his flank. And while he could still breathe, he takes the virgin into his drained hands, and as he exhaled with force his last breaths, the blood ran like a fountain upon the girl's white cheeks.
Exit Eurydice with her slaves, slowly, ominously.
And now a poor man is lying dead next to a dead bride, celebrating their wedding in Hades' palace. It's proof, though, that lack of thought is the worst thing for a man.
What do you think of that? Our queen has left us without saying a word, good or bad.
I thought that strange as well. But I hope that having heard her son's dire death, she thought it best to go and wail inside with her women rather than stand out here in public. She would have to begin the preparations for the grieving and lamentations of the household. She has a strong enough mind for these things, and she won't falter.
I don't know. I think, though, this long silence is a bad sign. And the prolonged grief is of no use either.
You're right. This long silence is a bad sign. Let's go inside and see if her shattered heart is hiding something.
Exit the herald. A moment later, Creon enters, holding the body of his son in his arms. He is followed by an entourage of his men.
The king! Blatant proof, if I had any word in the matter. The fault is no one else's but his own.
Oh, what end my foolishness has wrought. You see before you the murderer and victim, both from one household. What an unfortunate soul I have. My son, my Haman. How young you went to your untimely death. You're lost to me, not because of your own foolishness, but because of my own.
Oh, how late it is for you to see your faulty reasoning.
I know it now. Poor wretch, but some god held me tight then and threw hard upon my head a heavy weight, then tossed me about on a wild path, trampling upon my own joys. Torture that no man can endure.
Enter herald from the palace.
My king, you have all this calamity to deal with, and more. What you're holding in your hands is one thing, but there's more inside. Hurry, go inside and see it with your own eyes.
What new disaster could this be? Could there be anything worse than this?
Your wife is dead. This young man's poor mother. She has only just killed herself. Her wounds are still open.
Gluttonous harbor of Hades, why are you bent on drowning me? And you, my son, you came to hit a dead man. What did you say? What else have you to tell me? Has a more womanly sacrifice ever been cut for my own end? The central gate of the palace open and a bier, carrying Eurydice's body, is brought out.
You can see for yourself. They're bringing her out.
Oh, what a heavy fate. Here's my second crime. What's next, fate? What more shall I expect now? Here I can see my son, and there his mother, another death. Oh, poor mother. Poor unfortunate son.
She stood in front of the altar with a sharp blade, and with it she snuffed out her dark eyes. She first grieved for Megareus, her first son and yours, who died with such glory, and then for this young man here. Finally, she cursed you and all the ills of the world, that they should fall upon you because you've killed her son.
What dread! What horror! Why does no one, no friend of mine, run a sharp sword through me? What heavy fate surrounds me!
It was you whom Eurydice blamed for this young man's death and for the death of Antigone.
Tell me how she destroyed her life.
After I told her about the death of her beloved Hymen, she plunged her blade deep into her liver.
For all this disaster, there's no one else to blame except me. It was I. Yes, it was truly I who had murdered you. I, the wretched criminal. You, men, take me. Take me from here. Take me away. I'm less than nothing.
You'll profit if profit comes from pain, because of all the disasters man suffers, the disaster which passes quickly is the lesser evil.
Let her come. Let the best of my fates come now and bring me to the end of my life. Let her come and let me not see another day.
We must deal with this later, for now we need to think about what's before us. All else will be considered by those who should do the considering.
I only ask for what I yearn.
Ask of nothing for now. Man is not able to escape the disaster wrought by his fate.
Take me. Take this useless man from here. I have killed you, my son. I've killed you even though I did not want to kill you. And I've killed her. Thrice wretched am I, and I have nowhere to turn my eyes. Whatever my hands touch escapes them. What a heavy calamity has fallen upon my head. The most important thing in man's happiness is good judgment, and he must not treat with disdain the works of the gods. The arrogant pay for their big, proud words with great downfalls, and it's only then, in their old age, that they gain wisdom.
Exit all. End of Sophocles' Antigone. Young Greek women selling sex for the price of a sandwich, new study shows. Young Greek women are selling sex for the price of a sandwich as 6 years of painful austerity have pushed the European country to the financial brink. A new study showed Friday. The study, which compiled data on more than 17,000 sex workers operating in Greece, found that Greek women now dominate the country's prostitution industry, replacing Eastern European women, and that the sex on sale in Greece is some of the cheapest on offer in Europe. Some women just do it for a cheese pie or a sandwich. They need to eat because they're hungry, Gregory Laxos, a sociology professor at Pantheon University in Athens, told the London Times. Others do it to pay taxes, bills, for urgent expenses, or a quick drug fix. When the economic crisis began in Greece, the going rate for sex with a prostitute was 50 euros. The London newspaper quoted Laxos as saying, "Now it's fallen to as low as 2 euros for a 30-minute session." Laxos said the some 400 such desperate cases he found may be nominal compared with the thousands of other sex workers operating nationwide. But they never existed as a trend until the financial crisis, He said Greek women now account for 80% of the prostitution trade in Greece. He said his wide-ranging studies showed that the number of desperate young women, the ones offering the cheapest sex, appeared to be on the rise. Doesn't look like these numbers will fade, he told the Times. Rather, they are growing at a steady and consistent pace. The price of sex is falling globally, as the internet provides more and more sexual content online. The 180 euro average price of a one-hour encounter in Europe has dropped dramatically, the paper reported. Prostitution is legal in Greece, but very few of the country's brothels are licensed, the paper reported, pushing many of the estimated 18,500 prostitutes operating in Greece onto the streets. Factor in the growing number of girls who drift in and out of the trade, depending on their needs, and the total number of female prostitutes is startling.
That was Antigone live from the WGXC Hudson studio. That was Antigone live from the WGXC Hudson studio. You guys want to take a bow? Bow, 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 bow.